Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I go pretty far back. Not back, but I'll tell you this about Barry Zito. The Baybridge Trophy should be a likeness of Barry Zito in his 75. Half A's, half Giants. He was an A. He was a Giant. He's an A. And now he joins us on the best morning program in the Bay Area. What's up, Barry? How you been, kid?
I'm good. How are you guys? Sorry I was late to the show here. I lost track of time.
No
running
problem.
Running around doing a couple errands today.
Not a problem. Barry Zito joining us on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Barry, congratulations on the new song, Ballpark Kids. We played it drops today. You got to be thrilled about that. How does composing a song compare to composing or authoring a shutout?
Oh, a shutout. Oh, geez. You know, I think both are similar in that you can't really take responsibility for the final product. I think you just got to get kind of lost in the process. And when that happens, you know, usually, at least with songwriting, you know, you get something that, if anything, you like it. And, you know, hopefully other people like it too.
What's more difficult from a fine motor standpoint, playing the instruments you do, mandolin, banjo, guitar, or being able to snap off that 12-6 curve like you were able to?
You know, I would say they're both very similar in that you just have to trust your talent, your skill. But if you're not prepared, then both can be a disaster in front of a live audience or, you know, in front of a live hitter. So I think self-trust is really the name of the game there.
Barry, when was it? Well, you were a young lad and you said, you know what, this singing or this music thing is something that's just... What made you grow? What made it grow on you? What was that defining moment? Was it a group that you said, hey, I got a good ear for this?
Yeah, I think, you know, with a musical ear, you're kind of a lot of times born into it. You know, I mean, I had a musical family, and so I could just hear, you know, I could just hear things musically that I don't know if I can actually take credit for that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I just think it's something that I heard music in my house my whole life. My parents both had great ears, and my mom had perfect pitch, which basically means, you know, she could hear a sound like somebody's exhaust pipe driving down the street, and she'd be like, oh, that's a B flat.
Wow.
I don't have that, but I do feel like I got a lot of the inheritance of music. So, you know, I kind of was hoping to go into music full time, I would say, even while I was playing ball, but knew that that was going to be at a later phase in my life. And so I'm finally here, and I'm just having a blast.
The great Barry Zito, nice enough to join us, three-time All-Star, as you know, Cy Young Award winner, two-time world champ, author of Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame, and his brand-new song, Ballpark Kids, dropping today. Barry, pitching your last game 5 years ago this month against Tim Hudson and the Giants, I know that for fans, as a fan, a very meaningful, very special, I'll never forget it. What did that day mean to you, Barry?
Oh, that day against Hudson, I mean, it was quite surreal. I mean, to be honest, I didn't think I was getting called up to the A's. I was, you know, I was kind of like retired, so to speak, for 9 days, and then I got this phone call from Billy Beane, and so it was a little strange to think I would never play baseball again and then all of a sudden to be back in the big leagues like a week later. And then, you know, to go back to Oakland wearing the, you know, the A's uniform, being on the mound where I first made my debut, and then to pitch against a longtime friend, Hudson, who ironically was wearing a Giants uniform. I mean, there was just so many things about that day that were, you know, completely unscripted. So it was a little surreal, and I think I probably got a little too excited about everything and, you know, didn't pitch great, and I know Huddy didn't pitch great, and I think both of us just had to try to enjoy the actual experience, which it's hard to perform well and enjoy the experience, unfortunately, with pro sports. So You know, so I picked one at least.
Do you find that same thing in your music, that it's tough to enjoy it and perform well? Or do you, when you're out there and you're able to lose yourself in the music, and you're obviously not thinking about every word or every chord or every note, but can you really enjoy it, or are you just tense and tight trying to make sure that it's perfect every time out?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I would say there's a parallel there. I mean, when you are trying to be perfect and make sure that things go well, usually it won't, whether in sports or in music. But I think for performing on stage and certainly with just an acoustic guitar and your voice, which is about as exposed as you can be, authenticity is everything. And so, you know, my goal was just be totally real. If I screw up, I screw up, but I'm just going to really open my heart to the crowd right now and be vulnerable. And, you know, when I'm in that headspace, you know, I have a great time because I'm just telling the story from the heart, and it usually comes across to the audience, you know, and people can tell when, you're kind of faking it on stage. You know, it's pretty cool how the music fans, they have a real sense of what's real and what's not. And I think that, you just have to be always, you know, as real as you can be.
Man, Barry, it'd be awesome one day to get you on and let you, you know, give us a couple chords and hit a couple and a couple liners and let us feel it, baby. Let us feel it, my man. But hey, B knows what's up. He knows how to handle this. When you're looking at, you know, the Giants and you're seeing these two teams, the A's and the Giants, which one has been a huge surprise to you and why?
Gosh, you know, I mean, obviously they're both having strong years. I think the Giants, you know, with so much transition, you know, coming out of the Bochy era, obviously, you know, there's been some personnel changes going on. You know, I think that is a surprise. You know, they've dealt with a lot, and certainly in the COVID era and, you know, Posey, you know, and all these things stacked against them, really. And they're just coming out and proving people wrong. And it's been fun to watch. And, you know, the A's somehow always just magically figure out how to put a team out there, man. It's pretty incredible.
Barry, I don't, in no way, shape, or form do I mean to put you on the spot. I'm sure you have a unique perspective on this, comparing fans. Do the two franchises, fans of the A's, fans of the Giants, are very familiar with both. How would you compare them?
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, for me, I mean, my experience was interesting because I was part of the like early 2000s A's, right? So the A's fans were basically like that same attitude as the Raider fans, right? It was just kind of, you know, we're going there. Like we really, you know, we're diehards. We're at the Coliseum, you know, come rain, come shine, good team, bad team, it doesn't matter. And, you know, certainly in the playoffs, that was just an intimidating place to come and play. And, you know, Mount Davis was, I mean, shoot, if you could get Mount Davis half full back then, I mean, that was an accomplishment. So, and that was before the tarps were out in the upper deck. So, I mean, I have great memories of those fans just being so dedicated. And, you know, Dollar Beer Wednesdays, I mean, we would always watch the fights in the upper deck. I mean, we were as entertained as the fans were back then. But, you know, and then the Giants fans went through a bit of a kind of a transformation, I think, at least from a visiting player coming over to San Francisco. In the early 2000s, the fan base did not seem, I would say, as intimidating. I think they were definitely educated about baseball. I don't think that's changed. But in 2010, you know, with the whole run and the World Series, I mean, something happened in San Francisco. And after that, visiting players would talk, you know, because I would hear guys on other teams, and nobody wanted to come play in San Francisco. I mean, it was one of the most intimidating places to come play as a visiting player. And that was cool to be a part of that and to see that change.
No question, Barry. That must have been. You know what? Take you down memory lane, and one of my memories, fondest memories, is playing in Tennessee, 17 seconds left. We're losing. We need a miracle. They kick the ball. The big fella, Low Neal, grab it, pitch it back to Wycheck, hit to Dyson, crank up the band. We beat
Buffalo.
The Bills to win the game. Unbelievable. What is one of your fondest moments that you could be a part of, or just a game that you experienced that you just like, wow, I was a part of that?
For me, let's see, gosh, that's a lot of years in one question. I mean, for me, just everything that went into the whole San Francisco, kind of lots of lows and a few highs, yeah. You know, Sergio Romo throwing the last pitch to strike out Miguel Cabrera to end the 2012 World Series. That was a moment that will be forever locked into my mind. You know what I mean? Sure. And just like waiting in the dugout, you know, was felt like a, you know, a million horsepower engine ready to go full speed, and all of us were ready to charge. And you know, and he struck out Cabrera. And that was it. And we charged. And I mean, that was just the ultimate kind of redemption for me, just as a player, and to be able to help the team do something that I was paid a lot of money to come do and that I certainly didn't do for many years was incredible for me.
How tough was that from the time you signed? Because I was on the other side, and all people could talk about was 7 years and $126 million, and that was the drumbeat as the team was trying to go from the Barry Bonds era to the Barry Zito era. And you mentioned it, things didn't work out as planned in the beginning, but once you got that World Series ring, did you have that feeling finally of, I've arrived, and what I came here to do, I've been able to do?
Yeah, I mean, listen, for me, I mean, being kind of a, you know, perfectionist and probably too much, you know, I mean, it was a letdown. My, you know, my career was a letdown. I mean, just to be totally honest, what I was prepared to do in the game and really on pace to do after my first seven seasons in Oakland and what I had expected of myself to do in San Francisco, you know, I wanted to win 300 games, pitch 20 years and do all these things. And I was on pace to do, you know, a lot of those things. And then, you know, I just didn't have the foundation that was prepared to hold the pressure and to be sturdy under, you know, under the kind of, the you know, just the pressure of pro sports and money and all that. You know, I thought I did, and I didn't have any kind of foundation really. And so, I had to go through those tough times to really get a foundation, which I have now, thankfully. And, you know, I found God, I found something more important than baseball that really put everything in perspective. But, for me, I'd say the biggest vindicating moment was when Brian Sabian came out, I think in my last week as a Giant, 2013, before the season ended, and said if we had to do it again, we would do it. I would do it. I would sign Zito to that contract if I had to do it all over right now. And I think it had to do with mentoring young players and, you know, all these things. But when I read that in the paper, you know, I remember the moment. I was actually in the bathroom stall, like in the locker room, and I'm just reading the paper, you know. And I read that, and I think I just totally teared up at that moment and couldn't believe, you know, after those seven turbulent years that somebody would, you know, the guy that signed me would do it again. That was like the ultimate for me.
Barry, that says a lot about just your character, who you was as a man. And when you're going through those dark times and like the country is now, what would you say, you know, to those, and you said you chose to find God, which is, I'm in the same church and pew as you, but what would you say to those that are going through and struggling athletes? You see a guy like Jimmy G, different people struggle. How do you find that balance or find that comfort when so much is required of you?
Man, I mean, I would just sum it up as an identity crisis. I feel like most of us in the world, except for those few that have got it all figured out, and I'm certainly not one of them, but, you know, the world is very enticing, human approval and adoration. And, you know, pro sports or not, even if you're just at your job and you want your coworkers to love you, you know, these kind of things are so enticing to our egos that we start to identify too much with what everyone thinks. And am I enough? Am I good enough? Am I loved? Am I loved for who I am instead of what I do? I mean, those are the issues I think that drive us all a little insane. So, you know, for me, it's what identifies, you know, what defines me, right, as a human being. And if that thing is something that is going to be changing from day to day, such as a pitching performance like it was for me, that is a recipe for disaster. And I think a lot of pro players can agree.
Barry Zito with us again, the author of, as you know by now, Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. His new song, Ballpark Kids, dropping today. I want to apologize because we're talking about things much more important than baseball, obviously. But I have another baseball question for you, Barry. You mentioned 300 games, winning 300 games. And there was a time when you'd look at lists of guys most likely next to win 300, and you'd be on there. And now no one's going to win 300 games because the win has been de-emphasized. Okay, and I understand that. What was it like for you, I mean, to be the winning pitcher? What did that mean to you? And do you think maybe we're losing something there the way the win for the starting pitcher is being devalued?
Yeah, it's crazy you say that. I'm not too aware of that change. I mean, I'm a little out of touch with the game, you know, and there are a lot of stats I see now that I have no idea what they are. Like, I don't even know what these things, like barrel percentage and things. But, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because my mother always had this theory, and she actually, I was back in the day, I was friends with Peter Gammons, and I told Peter, my mom's idea was forget the win, let's start judging pitchers by quality starts. And now I have no idea if those apply as much today, but, you know, imagine if a pitcher's, let's say a guy gets 30 starts a year, you know, and he goes to pitch and the first stat you see is, let's say he's got 18 starts on the year, you know, you would see something like 14/18. It's like, wow, this guy's having a huge year. He's got 14 quality starts at 18. I mean, that's possibly Cy Young pace right there, you know? And so I think pitchers have a little more handle on whether they can throw up a quality start versus whether they can throw up a win. But I mean, ultimately the game is a traditional game and the win has always been the main stat, the first stat. But I always thought it's ironic how that's usually the one that they have the least control over.
You mentioned the analytics and how there's all these numbers that whether it's BABIP or exit velo or all, I'm kind of with you, Barry. Sometimes it's just too much numbers, too many analytics. Do you think that this is ultimately harming the game, the traditional game, or is it just more of a sign that this is what younger people and future fans are into?
Yeah, I mean, I just think attention spans are you know, waning, and, you know, we need to be quick to be entertained, and I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, I think that technology and analytics are going to make themselves into every aspect of our lives. I just hope it doesn't ever, you know, become more important than just sitting back and enjoying a baseball game. And, you know, if you're worried about all these kind of things that are, I guess, left brain oriented, you know, your intellect's going crazy, but, you know, sometimes you just want to sit back and have a hot dog and, you know, enjoy a ball game with your kids or, you know, with your parents. And I think that's more important.
Barry, one more if we could. I know you got to go here, but I may never get a chance to ask you this again. If you compare guitar chords to pitches, I got the fastball is the A power chord. I got a curveball, maybe E flat major 7 or F minor 7. And a curveball is like a suspended chord. Does that register at all? Make any sense to you?
That's interesting.
You could tell him no, Barry. You don't got to make
the fastball is definitely the power chord. Rock and roll, baby. And yeah. Let's see, a curveball is a little more of kind of a unique, maybe an artistic thing. So I would say like something with a 7 in it, like a major or minor 7. Let's see, the changeup would probably be probably just a minor chord, nothing too fancy. And then maybe like a knuckleball would probably be like, you know, an augmented or a diminished chord, something a little more funky,
nice.
A little more spicy.
Nice. Congratulations, Barry, on Ballpark Kids. We appreciate your time very much. Thanks for joining us, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
I like that.
I appreciate it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.